Yes, it's Friday, November 25. You're listening to the Big Sports Breakfast on Sky Sports Radio. A very good morning to you if you're just tuning in. We've got Wallaby great Matt Burke joining us this morning as Lozza goes and does the family thing over there across the ditch. No, he's not speaking to the Warriors.
I didn't say a word this time.
Don't start any rumours.
I didn't say a word. Just interesting that he's back in New Zealand before the start of footy season.
He's married to a Kiwi.
Okay.
Married to one.
Who lives in Australia.
Yeah, okay. Has family in New Zealand.
Mm.
Amazing. What a pleasure it is to have you, though, Bert.
Thank you
what
so
a
much
coincidence
for
that there's a birthday party on at the start of pre-season. Okay. Mm. And he hasn't signed his Manly deal yet. Just putting it out there. Go the Warriors.
We'll start some rumours about you next time.
Is that the Justin Langer source?
Source said he's looking at apartments in New Zealand. Anyway.
Okay. We got Adam Pengilly coming up shortly. Now we're on the text line that the Wagga Roosters wanting Ali Mosley's tip. So I'll read them out for you again. So she likes in the Festival Stakes tomorrow, Rose Hill Race 8 number 1, Sunshine Rising, $6. Her best bets at Rose Hill tomorrow, Race 7 number 5, Long Villas, $4.20 for J-Mac and Chris Waller. And she also likes for Bjorn Baker and Rachel King, Race 5 number 8, Rupertar, which is a $6 chance. She likes one at Canterbury tonight. Race 5, number 1, Spengler. $7.50 to win and $2.50 to place. And provided it is going that way still tomorrow, she really likes a Kembla. And these markets for Kembla will be open later today. But Race 7, number 3, Acquitted. So they are Ali Mosley's tips for today, well, tonight and tomorrow. After Adam Pengilly this morning, we've got Andy Harper and Archie Thompson to come as we look ahead to the Socceroos in Tunisia, 9 p.m. tomorrow. Jackson Irvine was speaking yesterday, says the players are used to quick turnarounds, and especially those who play in Europe, of course. A very quick turnaround between the loss to France and this game tomorrow night. Aiden Hrustic, who overcame an ankle injury but wasn't used against France, is an option for Graham Arnold. We spoke to Mossy earlier this morning in Qatar. He indicated that Hrustic should probably come back into that side. The market with Tab has Tunisia $2.15, Australia $3.60, and the draw paying $3.25. Martin Boyle, by the way, who was ruled out just on the eve of the World Cup, he's actually done his ACL. So that's a big blow for him and obviously his Scottish Premier League club, Hibs. Certainly was a blow for the Socceroos, so that was naturally a very serious injury, having done his ACL. Now, just the results overnight. Switzerland beat Cameroon 1-0. Uruguay and South Korea finished scoreless. And Cristiano Ronaldo became the first player to score at 5 World Cups in men's World Cups. 3-2, Portugal beat Ghana. He's a superstar, isn't he?
Do you still like him?
Oh, I've never really been an anti. Oh, yeah, I don't love him.
Well, it's because why, mate?
Because he played for Manchester United and I'm a Liverpool fan.
That's
pretty obvious.
That's correct.
Genius. The thing I think separates Ronaldo and Messi is his exploits, particularly for his country.
Yes. Man, yeah. Messi was...
Yeah. I thought Messi retired from...
He was awful
Argentina at one stage. After one... there was a World Cup loss there.
They lost the final in 2014 to Germany.
And I thought
and
he retired.
Came back. Yeah, you're right.
He did. He bailed from Argentina. That game the other day against Saudi Arabia, I know he sort of walks around the park and sort of picks his moments when he goes, but there was just no energy at all from him the other day. And then, ironically, the team never passed him the ball. Mm. Well, they played around him for 15, 20 minutes. And he wasn't his usual self. And as a mate said, well, he didn't have his, you know, his superstar team around him, so to speak. And like the PSG guys or the Barca team, you know. So he was a bit off the mark, that's for sure.
Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald. Good morning to you.
Morning, Jared. Morning, Clarky. Morning, Berkey. How are you going, boys?
Doing really well. Now, tell us about this yarn you've written in the Herald today about Adam Scott having to, break into some room to get his clubs before his round yesterday morning. What doing?
Yeah, quite fascinating, Jared. He had a 6 o'clock tea time yesterday with Cameron Smith and Ryan Fox, and chatting earlier in the week, he said it's the earliest tea time he's ever had in his professional career, and he's got a little bit of a rule. He likes to be up 3 hours before tea time, just so he's alert and awake and go through his warm-ups and everything like that. It's a slow start to you know, to an early round, early in the tournament, could be the cost you be the difference by the end of the week if you drop a couple of shots in your first four or five holes. But he had an issue yesterday in terms of he'd given his clubs to one of his, I suppose, team, if we put it those ways, one of his representatives, and put him in his room. And he'd woken up, he was fine. His caddy, Steve Williams, Tiger Woods' former caddy's out of retirement this week, was fine. But the bloke who had the clubs wouldn't wake up yesterday. So they were banging on the door and trying to get the clubs out of his room. They eventually got it in the end. But I think his warm-up was probably a little bit rushed yesterday, but it certainly didn't affect him on the course, Jared. He was outstanding. Clearly the best of the morning wave at 5-under there yesterday, shooting 66. Cameron Smith found his mojo late in the round, if I put it in those terms. He was very sluggish out of the gates on that outward nine. I think he turned in one over. Then he had birdie on his 10th hole of the day, the first, and really got going on the back nine and finished well for 3-under. So he's in a really good position. I can't underestimate, Jared, just how much work Cameron Smith has done off the course this week in terms of promotional requests, fan requests, just everything like that. And he's got to soak it up, doesn't he? Because he's only going to come home as a, you know, winning his first major and winning the Claret Jug once, probably in his career. So he's embraced it all. He's been fantastic for the sport. And I think the longer this tournament goes on, the more he'll probably find his groove later on the weekend.
But we were just talking about it then, about all the rumblings of the LIV Golf and sort of the fractions that are happening there. He came home the other day, got the keys to the city of Brisbane. He was holding the world's biggest clinic, I think it was, trying to set a record. And you're right, he's an Aussie and he's back. He got presented the Tim Tams and he's enjoying himself.
Yeah, he's loving it, Berkey. And just back on the LIV Golf scenario for a second. Surprisingly, there hasn't been a whole lot of talk about it, to be honest, up here in Brisbane all week. Like, I know it's a bit of a taboo subject and whatever else, and our best player has obviously signed for Greg Norman's Saudi back tour, but I think people are just getting on with it now. They're accepting it. They know that Cameron Smith and Mark Leishman and these guys are going to be playing in that LIV Golf League next year, and they just want to celebrate them coming home and playing the first tournament in Australia for 3 years. And I was out on the course, obviously, early yesterday, about 6 a.m. tea time, or local tea time, and there would have been at least 500, 600, 700 people straight away there at 6 a.m. in the morning. And obviously, as the round went on, a couple of hours down the line, there would have been a crowd of at least maybe 2,000 or 3,000 at least following Cameron Smith and Adam Scott. And that's on a work day up here in Brisbane. So I can only imagine what it's going to be like when we get on the weekend in the third and fourth rounds when people aren't working. So, yeah, it's been great so far. The one thing I will say, boys, is that, Clark, you spend a bit of time up here in Queensland on holidays, don't you?
I love it.
How does anyone adjust to non-daylight saving up here in summer? Well, dead set, it is daylight at 4 o'clock in the morning.
It's bright. I just remember schoolies.
The thing I love about Queensland with the time difference, I love when you fly to Queensland from Sydney and you get that hour back. So you fly at 11, you land at 11.
Yeah.
I love that. Yeah. The worst thing in the world is when you've got to come back to Sydney. So you land, you're flying at 10 and you end up landing at 1. The time difference back here is a killer.
Yeah.
I woke up this morning and I rolled over. What time is it? And the sun was up. It was 4 o'clock in the bloody morning.
Yeah, it is.
The sun's not just up. It's on. Middle of the sky.
You can start your tanning at 4 a.m.
Sunscreen.
Sunscreen at 4 a.m.
Yeah, it's
sleeping.
So anyway, but it's been a great tournament so far, boys. Looking forward to today.
What did you make of... well, you tipped us to Cam Davis yesterday and I followed you in just before the tee off time. The event went live in the betting yesterday. But Minwoo Lee, Jason Scrivener and John Lyris, is it, at the top of the leaderboard? Yep. Adam Scott played well too, 5-under. And Cam Smith, after a slow start, he really struck back on the back nine.
Yeah. Do you know who I saw yesterday, Jared? I saw Gowie out on the course late in the day. And I said to him, you tipped Minwoo Lee this morning, didn't you? And he was up and about. Don't worry about
that. He tipped Maverick Antcliffe as well, who's 4-under.
4-under. Yeah, 4-under as well. So he's seeing him like beach balls, Gowie. He's very, very clever.
Mate, just a quick one. When you're saying you saw Gowie on the course, is he throwing the? Is he chasing the white ball?
Oh no, he was doing the commentary work. For the broadcast. But I reckon I spied him on the range late in the day as well, having a bit of a hit. So he's obviously keeping his game up to the mark. I don't know what he's planning in the future, but. He was around everywhere yesterday, and he's very, very clever with his golf tips, isn't he? And Minwoo Lee looks outstanding in the afternoon wave there yesterday. There wasn't a lot of wind yesterday in the afternoon, which obviously you expect when you have the afternoon tea times. It was very, very still all afternoon, and a lot of the better scores were actually shot in the afternoon. But Minwoo Lee looks like he's come back to Australia in really good form, and he actually flew from Dubai. He was playing in the race Dubai last week, had to get on a flight back down to Australia this week. But even he didn't do it as tough as the New Zealander Ryan Fox, who played in Dubai as well last week. Get a load of this. He flew from Dubai to to Auckland to drop his family off back in New Zealand, and then from Auckland to Sydney. And I saw him on, might have been Tuesday afternoon this week up here. Like, he didn't know where he was, seriously. He was in another world.
Delirious.
After going through all those different time zones. And probably not surprisingly, he didn't play great yesterday. They had one over. So, but the leaderboard, the way it shapes up at the moment, Jared, is great with all the big guns up there. Minwoo Lee, obviously Adam Scott, Cam Smith. And Cam Davis, my tip, he had a really, really funny round. He was paddling all day. He was two over with holes to go. And then he went eagle par birdie on his last three holes to get back to one under. So he's still in the mix there somewhere, but probably going to need to shoot a 64, 65 at some stage later in the week.
So what about Ryan Fox? Ryan Fox is the son of Grant Fox, the All Black legend, number 10. Yeah.
Right.
And a couple of years ago, we played a game of golf in Europe. It was like a Northern Hemisphere versus Southern Hemisphere. And Ryan Fox was on the bag for Dad. So he came and I played around with Dad, and he was talking to him about Ryan, his son. He hits the ball that hard with his driver. He snapped his driver in half, like the head of the driver. So he gives an almighty whack, and he's not a big guy. He's solid, though. Interestingly, though, he was saying his putting is not as good as what it could be. I mean, of all the things that he can do, he's got to keep putting and go well. But he is he's good talent. He goes well.
He's built like a rugby player as well, Berkey, Ryan Fox. You know him, you've met him. He's a solid guy, right? And I can imagine him playing rugby as a kid, obviously, when he was growing up. Hits the ball a mile. And the year he's had this year has been phenomenal. Won a couple of events over there in Europe. He's up to world number 27 in the world. And a lot of people were saying he was extremely unlucky not to make the President's Cup team, the international side. And
Whether
that was because he wasn't a PGA Tour member, there might have been the politics at play, I'm not too sure. But he, for a guy who, I think he's 35, 6 maybe, he's around that.
Yep.
He's had a breakout year in his mid-30s. It's incredible. Absolutely incredible.
Okay, let's talk some footy before we get your mail for tomorrow. But there's this report about Dylan Brown that the Dolphins have started negotiations to try and land the 22-year-old off-contract Paris star, looking at, well, at least $1 million a season to try and lure him to the Dolphins. Now, Brown's agent is adamant that he's happy there at the Eels and that it'd take a massive offer for him to leave. But what are you feeling as far as Moses and Brown is concerned there at Parramatta and whether they'll stay or not?
Is that manager's comments, Jared, translation for just show us the money? How much have you got to the other clubs?
Exactly right.
Commish. Cha-ching.
I think it's going to be difficult for Parramatta to keep both Mitchell Moses and Dylan Brown, because given the seasons they've both had in their form over the last couple of years, they're both grand final halves now. I know they got blown off the park by Penrith. They're going to both probably command in the $1 million range, if not more. And the salary cap pressure on Parramatta is going to increase. I know they've lost a lot of guys from last year to this year, but the steel cap is still, you know, relatively tight. So if they can keep both, that's a massive, massive feather in the cap for the club. But I just got this feeling that one of them might have to go. I don't know which one. And I honestly don't know which one Parramatta will prioritise, to tell you the truth. Like, I know Dylan Brown's a lot younger than Mitchell Moses, but, you know, a good number seven, they're rolled gold.
Is Dylan Brown, is he a $1 million player, though?
Oh, good question, Berkey. He's probably not at that stage.
At the Dolphins,
he is. Where
it's market forces.
Definitely.
100%. Clarkie's right, Berkey. If he goes to a club like the Dolphins, who need a high-profile half, a star player, he's worth $1 million, 100%. No doubt about it. Is he the type of guy who can command a team around the park and lead them around, get to the spots they need to, and really drag a team when the chips are down and say, come on, we're going to get across the line? He's still a bit young, so he might not be that player yet, but he can evolve, he can mature, he can definitely be that type of player in the future. So I think the Dolphins will make a massive play for Dylan Brown, obviously. His family, he's got family in Western Sydney as well, who are settled down there as well, so there's probably no need for him to really leave Parramatta if he doesn't want to. Mm. It might just come down to dollars and cents, boys.
Well, Gold Brazil, by the way. Richarlison, Tottenham player, has scored 1-0 Brazil against Serbia over there at the World Cup. Now, Peter Parr, we've got on the show later today, and plenty of... David Clem has spoken to the media as he's made that move naturally from the Knights to the Tigers. I reckon it's a really good pickup for the Tigers. You look at their forward pack now, Adam. There's some you know, seasoned grunt in there, and there's some young talent like Isaiah Papali'i, and obviously some guile in Appy Coruscant coming to the club as well.
I think it was a good move for both clubs, Jared. David Clemmer coming down to the West Tigers, Jackson Hastings going up to Newcastle. So they both probably filled pieces they were desperately looking to fill. Like, we all know the Knights needed a halfback badly, and Jackson Hastings can be that player who can steer them around the park and maybe free up Kalen Ponga if he plays in the halves and switches to 5'8". But what the Tigers are doing with their forward pack, I think, is really smart. Like, I think they realise they haven't had the mongrel up front for the last probably, you know, 2, 3, maybe 4 years. And getting guys like David Clemmer in, getting Isaiah Papali'i, Api Koroisau is going to provide that craft and that goal around from number 9. If they can get John Bateman as well, and the jury might be out about whether John Bateman's maybe his best days are behind him, but at least he gives you that sort of fear factor and a bit of mongrel. And they can go to other prospective players now and say, look, if you want to play in the halves for us, if you want to get to market for a Mitchell Moses, say, for example, well, this is the forward pack you're playing behind. And Clemmer, I think, still has got at least 2 or 3 good years in front of him. He's been around for a long time, obviously, Jared, but he's only 28, isn't he? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, 28.
So he's still got 2 or 3 good years you'd like to think in front of him. So I can see the Tigers improving and improving a fair bit next year. Whether it's good enough to make the finals, I probably still doubt, but definitely they'll win more games than what they did this year.
Give us a tip for tomorrow at Rosehill.
What a tough program, Jerry. Jesus, a tough program at Rosehill there tomorrow. I actually don't mind race 8 number 10, Kiss Some, in the Festival Stakes, the feature race. Just put a line through his last start in Melbourne. Wasn't suited going down there in a race that wasn't quite run to suit. His run before that in the Silver Eagle was enormous behind Villana. I think getting back to Rosehill on a dry surface around 1,500 metres would probably suit him. So race 8 number 10, Kiss Some, is my best value on the program. And as forecast yesterday, I'm having something small on Through the Cracks, race 9 number 2, Through the Cracks in the Starlight Stakes. I know it's probably a bit short of his best trip. If they go hard up front, he might be a chance to run over them and be in the finish somewhere.
Okay, Kiss Some, race 8 number 10, $6.50 with Tab. Have a great day there at the golf, Adam. Thank you.
Enjoy the weekend, boys.
Imagine how off this bloke went when Sean Bruce just hit that triple from the corner for the Sydney Kings at the buzzer to beat the Hawks on Sunday. Brad Rosen, morning to you.
Mate, it was like when John Aloisi kicked that goal to get us into the World Cup. It was
exact same feeling, you reckon? Do you take your shirt off as well? Run around the lounge room with your shirt off?
I would not do that to anyone. My wife would kick me out of home.
Mate, they're on fire though, aren't they?
They're just great,
even when they're not at their best, they're finding a way.
Well, they did, and they found that way without arguably the best player in the league at the moment, in Xavier Cooks, who was injured. So I thought they did a tremendous job to win that game. I was actually gutted for the poor Illawarra Hawks. Oh, they threw everything at them in the kitchen sink. But then to go down in a game-winning 3 was unbelievable, considering 2 weeks prior they did the exact same thing to the different team. So it was amazing. Great win by the Kings, and it was brilliant.
Yeah, just on the Hawks, now the club put out a statement responding to rumours they could relocate to Sydney, I see, as well, in 2026. They were described as baseless, factually untrue, without any credible substance. I saw Shane Heal, though, say on the basketball show, Brad, if the fans don't support the team consistently, the league may have no choice.
Yeah, and that's where he's right. You know, from my understanding, there's some great backing in Illawarra with some good financial support. So I don't think it's the money side of things, but it is the fact that the team is not getting supported. I do go down there and call a lot of games for the NBF. Sometimes those crowds are pretty poor. Now, when they're winning, it's great. But unfortunately, that hasn't been the case this year with only one win. And I agree with what Shane's saying. The NBL may have no choice. I mean, we're getting, you know, constant crowds like 10,000, 11,000 to all these games. For the NBL, they probably don't want 1,000, 2,000 down there in Wollongong. So it makes total sense. But hopefully the Hawkeys fans get out there and support their team.
Okay, last night we saw a win. It was the 36ers beating the Wildcats in Perth, too, 96-82.
Yeah, I think the biggest ever win for Adelaide in Perth. They got some troubles with the Perth Wildcats. Bryce Cotton is trying to carry this team. I think they're going to have to make an import change. Something's got to go on. But let's take nothing away from Adelaide. Great win. I think 4 or 5 guys had double figures and they played really well. CJ Bruton doing a really good job there.
Looking at the Hawks, they've got the South East Melbourne Phoenix Sunday away. And the Kings go to Cairns on Monday night. So how do you see... the two, I guess, local clubs faring as they prepare to go on the road.
Yeah, look, South East, I think, will be too strong for the Illawarra Hawks. I don't see anything but a pretty good win there. But this Cairns-Sydney game is going to be outstanding. No news on whether Xavier Cooks will be back. There was a talk, it was a couple of weeks. But I actually watched him before the game on Sunday, and he was doing some shooting, and he looked great on his ankle. So that's a good sign. If they can go up there and have him versus Cairns, it's going to be ripper. Cairns are a fantastic team. This will be a ripper game. They're in third spot. Keanu Pitt is playing an MVP-type season. coach is outstanding. Their imports are brilliant. Really fun team to watch.
Buddy, in the NBA, Ben Simmons looks to be heading in the right direction. A couple of really good games and under pressure as well.
Isn't it great? Yeah, isn't it great to see? I mean, we've spoken at this at length, and you know, the question was, will he get back to himself? And he's certainly looking like that.
Yeah.
Played in Philly for the first time. Obviously, he didn't play last year with the Nets when he got traded. So he played in there for the first time, and he actually came out and said, "I thought the booing would be worse." So it's great to see him getting back to what we want to see from Ben Simmons. Also, hopefully, the Australian boomer Ben Simmons is what we want to see.
I see Josh Green scored 23 points, a career high for Dallas, in their loss to Denver during the week as well. So the Aussies flying over
there. He's a baller. He's a baller, and he's really athletic. He's only going to get better as well. Of course, part of that bronze medal team. Didn't play a lot of minutes, but he was young, but doing really well, Josh Green.
Now, just back home in the WNBL, it's been a tough start to the season for the Sydney Flames, Brad, but how are you feeling about the season generally there in the WNBL?
Yeah, look, it's been on the back of a great bronze medal in the World Cup, and the WNBL is just humming at the moment. There's been a couple of weeks now, and you know, there's games over 100 points. This is probably the best I've ever seen the WNBL, and it's fantastic. The Flames had a bye the first round. Then they had to play in Melbourne, then the Doomsday Double in Adelaide and Perth. So a real tough start for Shane Heal and his team, but I reckon they'll come good, and they're a good team. They're well coached, and I'm looking forward to watching them play. But right now, Bendigo and Townsville, they're the teams to beat. They are humming. Townsville look great. And, of course, Lauren Jackson is playing for the Southside Flyers, so she's back this season in her swan song. So it's a really, really good season. I'm looking forward to it continuing.
Thank you, Brad. Have a great weekend.
Thank you, boys. Enjoy. And remember, go those Kings.
Go those Brazilians as well. Richarlison, Berkey's just pointed out to me here in the studio, has just scored an absolute specky. Not quite a bicycle kick, but it was acrobatic.
It was more fly kick, wasn't it?
Yeah. 2-0 Brazil over Serbia at the World Cup. 81 minutes gone. Richarlison, Tottenham player, with 2 goals for the Brazilians. And it's Thanksgiving Day over in the States. Ever been in the States for Thanksgiving, fellas?
Never.
Never done
great
it.
Great day to be over there, I reckon. And Buffalo and Detroit playing at the moment in the NFL. 21 seconds left in the match. And it looks like Detroit are going to give themselves a chance to probably have a crack at a field goal here and tie it and put it into overtime. 25-22, Buffalo leading the Detroit Lions, but they've got a play under review at the moment to see whether he's gone down, the Detroit player, as they try and move the ball forward to get in field goal range to potentially send this game to overtime. So this will take probably 3 minutes, but 25-22, Buffalo leading as it stands. The other games coming up today on Thanksgiving Day, the Dallas Cowboys $1.18 up against the New York Giants $4.80 with tab, and the line is a flat 10. Cowboys the minus, and the Minnesota Vikings are $1.67 coming off a big loss last week as well. The Vikings, where they were, well, they were destroyed, weren't they? And they're up against, well, they're destroyed by the Dallas Cowboys, 40-3. But they're $1.67 favourites against the New England Patriots, who are $2.20 and plus 2.5 at the line of the Patriots for that game. Now, the other games at the World Cup overnight, if you missed those, Switzerland beat Cameroon 1-0. Uruguay and South Korea finished scoreless. Portugal beat Ghana 3-2. And just in that match as well, Cristiano Ronaldo becomes the first player to score at 5 World Cups. He scored from the spot there last night. Now, the Sticky Wings multi, by the way, it's still happening. I know Loz isn't here today, but we've got the Brad Davison / Matt Burke special, courtesy of Sticky Wings. And Davo's tip is in race 4 tomorrow at Rose Hill Gardens, Festival Stakes Day. So race 4, number 5, Mission Phoenix to run top 2. And Berkey has gone to, well, he's gone to the rugby, but he's gone head over heart, Berkey.
Yeah.
What
Wales,
have you got for us?
Wales to win against Australia. Final test of the year, 1-12 for the win there. Australia's got an inexperienced team at the moment. So if they win, for Australia's point of view, well done.
What?
I don't think they will.
I was just looking at the team, Berkey. Gee, Noah Lolasio
Mate, that's a talking point in itself.
Yeah, so Ben Donaldson, who played, came on very late in that Italian test and was like, oh, mate, welcome to Test Rugby. Can you just win us this game,
just
by
knock
the
it
way?
Over. Yeah.
Just knock it over and win the game. Missed the kick, the conversion, so we lost by a point. He's named to start at 10. But what's going on with Noah Lolesio? It seems like he's just... There must be aspects of his game that really annoy the coaching staff.
Well, the frustrating part, I think, for his point of view... Rennie comes out in the interviews, in the press conference, and says, you know, we've got great faith in this guy. He's going to be a great player. We need him to stick around. It's going to be great. He's going to be a great player. It's like, mate, I reckon let him go. Like, don't put him in test matches. Like, put him back to – let him have a season of maybe super rugby and then go back to club rugby to get some confidence. Because at the moment, he's this young – he must be only 21, I reckon, and he's played limited football – and he's been substituted so many times. And then he's thinking, you know, Bernard Foley goes back because it's the international window with his Japanese club. So he can't play. And I think Lolesio is thinking, right, I'm a lay down misere here. I'm going to get a start. And they pick a bloke who's played 4 minutes and he's one of the Tar boys, but wasn't a regular starter with the Waratahs last year, and he's playing test match football. So, mate, well done to him for getting a start, for a starting debut. But talk about pressure on his shoulders for a young bloke. Lolesio, sadly, he just doesn't seem to be in the mix.
Well, at least the Wallabies have managed to rustle up 23 players to take the park.
Did you see Drew Mitchell? Drew Mitchell posted, by the way, boys, I'm in Europe and I have my boots, just in case.
Oh, God.
They're falling down.
Okay, time to talk some Newcastle Knights. And joining us now, well, he's an Overcastrian that returned home to be the Knights Director of Football there, and that was in late July or early August. Got back there after, what, 2 decades there at the North Queensland Cowboys. Joining us is the Knights Director of Football, Peter Parr. Peter, good morning.
Good morning, Mido. How are you?
Yeah, really well, thanks. Appreciate your time. And now that you've been there for a few months back in Newcastle, I guess to what extent has it been eye-opening watching how the Knights operate? Or is it a football operation close to being a powerhouse again? How do you see it as you look at how the whole organisation works?
I think we're, if I'm being completely honest, I think we're a bit short of being a powerhouse. I think that we've got some really good building blocks in place. We've got, you know, great community, we've got a great junior network, we've got a good pathway system, but I think it's fair to say, mate, that for a long period of time now, the Knights haven't been able to actually nail it. And so, you know, that's part of, you know, a lot of my role now is trying to set it up. So, you know, eventually it can be a powerhouse, because I think there'd be a fair argument with a lot of people that it should be, given, you know, one team town and all the resources available to us.
Pete, it seems like you guys have always got the support and the fan base that every club craves. How much pressure now goes on to, you know, leadership, support staff, head coach? Again, it looks to me like you're looking to change the structure of play or change some important aspects of the Knights' on-field game this season, in bringing in Jackson Hastings, Kalen Ponga probably moving into the halves. So how important is this for your fans, but also for the team to make it work this season?
Yeah, look, I think it's a really important year because, you know, a couple of years prior to last season, they were there or thereabouts. Yeah. And then, you know, we had a poor year in 2022. And I think that what we need to start doing, Michael, is start competing better against the better sides. Yeah. Our record against top four and top eight teams is not great. And you're right, we get a lot of great community support, but you can't be complacent about that. At the end of the day, you know, people will start to run out of patience if they, you know, don't see the team making some adjustments and some improvements. I don't think the Newcastle community, by any stretch, expect you to turn up every weekend and watch a win. Yeah. But they do have an expectation that they will turn up and watch a team that will be enthusiastic and competitive and, you know, represent the DNA of the town.
With that then, Pete, how do you get that balance with the superstar in Kalyn Ponga. Now, I think we've all said when he plays for Queensland, oh my God, there's very rarely is there a better player on the field. And I have no doubt he would like that consistency playing for the Knights. When do you get to a stage where you take away the freedom for him to, if he wants to play fullback, but it's best for the team he plays six, you make that tough call? Or who sits with him and has the conversation and says, mate, the money you're on, I know there's a lot of expectation, I know there's a lot of pressure, but you need to live up to this because the best players in the game do.
Yeah, I think that's something that, you know, Kalyn's well aware of. And you're right. His form for Queensland is impeccable.
Yeah.
And, and he plays those games like it's... he wants to win that game more than any other he's ever played in. And I think when you look at someone like James Tedesco, he plays like that every weekend.
Yeah.
And I think that's where Kalyn needs to get to. And I think, sorry, boys. Just the
dogs are barking.
That's what happened when you see Kevin Walters, remember?
Dogs agree, I reckon.
I think Kalyn's got to get, I think that's where Kalyn would like to get to. I know he has a great desire to get more consistency in his footy. He knows what he's capable of, and he also understands he hasn't done it, you know, on a consistent basis at club level. And, I think he's getting to the stage of his career where, you know, he needs to start, you know, owning this footy team. It's got to be his team, a bit like, the other great players, Cameron Smith, Jonathan Thurston, Andrew Johns, Darren Lockyer, they all own the team. In my opinion, anyway, yeah. And I think that's where Kalyn's got to get to. He's still only a young man, but I think now this is where he's getting to it at this stage of his career.
Pete, how's his health, by the way?
Oh, no, he's good, yeah.
Yeah, he's good to go?
I'd only just run into him about 15 minutes ago, and he said he's feeling great. He's back doing everything at training, and he looks good.
Good stuff. Now, what about that swap that happened pre-season? Clemmer Hastings, happy with filling a role there with Jackson Hastings in your team now?
Yeah, we are. Halfbacks, good halfbacks in particular are hard to find. And we felt that we were well stocked in the middle forwards during the year. The club went out and purchased Jack Hetherington and Adam Elliott. And if you put those guys with the Siafridis brothers, and we got a young middle forward, Leo Thompson, who we got a lot of time for, we thought we were well covered with middle forwards. And there's no doubt we were lacking some expertise in the halves. And so we thought it was, a good fit for us. The Tigers were looking for someone to shore up their middle forward rotation. So I thought in the end it worked well for everyone. And look, we're delighted with our end of the bargain. We think Jackson will have a big impact on our club.
Peter, is the club still very much in the market for a fullback in the short term then to potentially cater for Kalyn's move into the halves?
Yeah, I think that I think Adam O'Brien, our coach, would like to have the option of putting Kalyn into the halves. And so it seems to be a lot more speculation about that outside of the club than inside. I think that, ultimately Adam and Kalyn and, the coaching staff, I suppose, will ultimately decide where Kalyn plays. But if we could snag a fullback, at least that would give Adam some options to consider. At the moment, Kalyn would be the only established fullback in the squad. So, what we would like to do is potentially snag a fullback, and then at least that will give Adam options then of where he could play Adam and others, of course.
Peter, we get texts about, from people in the Hunter about the Zach Hoskins, the Jock Maddens, and, when we looked at Newcastle when they were a powerhouse, it was obviously there was a very special player there in Andrew Johns, but a lot of other special players that were the very much homegrown products, particularly in a rugby league nursery, as you touched on. It's a club that seemingly struggled to keep its own, though. The issues you've identified in that pathway structure, obviously it's difficult, though, because players can just go, have a contract land on their desk and they can end up anywhere. But, I suppose in that pathway structure, things you've identified that need to really improve to get those players staying in Newcastle.
I think we've got to have a focus on local talent. Like this year, you know, our Jersey Fleet team, you know, were defeated in, that's under 21s, they were defeated in Golden Point in the grand final by Penrith. Our SG Ball side ran second. So, you know, our two, you know, I suppose major junior sides both, you know, had particularly good years. So the key, obviously, for anyone is to try and hang on to your best local talent and not only identify, you know, their playing ability, to bring them into an environment where they can learn and be educated and improve as people and as players and, you know, have an environment where they don't want to leave. And of course, we're a fertile area, mate. Like, a lot of people that don't have the junior base of ours head to Newcastle because they think, you know, well, if we don't have them in our own backyard in Sydney, well, it's only 2 hours up the road and, you know, there's a big market there. So we do get a lot of competition, but we should embrace that. And there's no doubt that, you know, we should have a goal of keeping more of our local juniors. You know, I grew up here, so I understand the importance of that. I was at a club for nearly 21 years and run through a lot of, you know, locals through their system. So it's a real goal of mine to provide as many opportunities as we can for young guys in Newcastle and the Hunter region. It's just logically my point of view. And, of course, the real good ones, we just can't afford to lose anymore.
Now, you did have one of the great stories, Wooden Spoon, for the NRLW, your women's side, premiership winners last year, incredible rise. You got a young girl in there called Jessie Southwell. How special is he? Is she, should I say, in amongst that team of you know, some established girls?
It's hard to believe she's only 17. You know, and what she did and her composure and the way she played, you know, and she had some superstars around her, like Millie Boyle and Tamika Upton and, you know, Yasmin Clydesdale, who were established NRLW players. And at 17, to be able to, you know, to be able to direct them around and bark orders at them, you know, you two blokes played at the top level of your sport at a young age and you know, you can only imagine what it must be like at 17 and having to tell established internationals what to do on the field. And she did it, you know, on her ear. So, you know, we're excited about her future. Yes, a great young girl. And, she's special.
Well, Pete, really appreciate your time this morning and really looking forward to seeing how the Knights square up in 2023. Thank you.
Yes, so am I. Thanks for your time. Thank you.
What was that?
When's the anniversary of Charlie Pye?
Yeah, oh, we were just telling Berkey the story. What it was about 2 years ago. I've got Loz and Clarkey sitting in here singing Charlie Pride songs on the Friday morning.
Yeah,
what happened that weekend, Clarkey?
Yeah, we were celebrating the great Charlie Pride. My old man didn't give me a choice. I had to listen to him as a kid in the car. I fell in love with him, listened to every song, know all the words.
Yeah.
Then I found out Loz is the same. So we're in on a Friday, Berkey, just singing along and talking about how good Charlie Pride is. And
guess what happened that weekend?
Unfortunately, he passed away on the Saturday.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we were the mock. So we sort of did his eulogy before he passed.
Before he passed.
Unbelievable.
Anyway, I think whenever the day is
December 12, 2020.
There you go. December 12. So before we go on our break, I think we should do something for Charlie on his anniversary. What do you think? Are we allowed to play any songs in here? How does it work? Like, we're not allowed much in here at all.
He was 86, Charlie. It was a good knock.
We don't give many things away. Surely we can Charlie Pride up, Wilbur.
Just write that down, December 12.
Come on,
Charlie Pride.
Loz will be up for it.
Loz could sing a few songs.
Yeah, Loz knows the words. Yeah. He's good.
Let's find some winners at Rose Hill tomorrow and Canterbury tonight. Brad Davidson, good morning to you.
Good morning, guys. How are we going?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks.
Dave, you got no idea who Charlie Pride is, do you?
I don't know, but said to you that news a couple of years ago, guys. Yes.
Respect. Well done.
Let's go. Let's start at Canterbury tonight, Dave. What's your best at Canterbury tonight?
Yeah, guys. Look, it's a meeting that's going to be a good meeting out there. Good weather. I'll have a good look at that meeting throughout the day. But I'm sort of focusing on Rose Hill and Caulfield this weekend at this stage. But look, Rose Hill tomorrow. The Starlight Stakes, guys. I'm with Mr. Mosaic in the two features, the Starlight and the Festival. I'm with Mr. Mosaic and Coal Crusher. Two horses, I think, can get to the front and roll along there. Cole Crusher beat Wahaha Falls the other day. He drops a stacking weight in the festival. So he's got to run out 1,500. That's the concern for him. But he was top pick for me in the festival. And when it comes to the Starlight Stakes, I'm going to go with Mr. Mosaic. He's been well supported already. But look, I just think he's an 1,100-metre Rose Hill specialist, loves dry ground, and his best runs are always first up. So I thought he could find the lead there in the Starlight tomorrow and be very hard to catch at around that $6.50 mark.
Mido, what did we say? One of our listeners texted in and said, carrying feathers, I think it was. Was that right, Mr.
Yeah, Mosaic? Yeah, just because Reece Jones is on, so he gets the claim. And, he's in the ownership group.
Right.
One of our listeners who texted in about Mr. Mosaic. So Mr. Mosaic in the Starlight. Who'd you say in the festival? Sorry, Davo?
Cole Crusher. Any confidence there in the camp for Mr. Mosaic? He hasn't trialled, so normally has a trial before he comes back. But look, normally the team get him ready to rumble fresh. So I was sort of taking that guide with him as well.
Do you know many owners that aren't pretty keen on their own horse, Dave?
that's a good shout. That is a good shout. Yes, I've caught many owners' tips over the years, that's for sure.
What about your best on the program then?
Race 4, number 5, Mission Phoenix. I just made him the best at around the $6.50 mark. Look, floating's the horse to beat, but he's going to go straight to the front there tomorrow and he's going to run really well. They put the blinkers on him second up at Canterbury. He absolutely bolted in very fast time. I just thought he'd be very hard to catch. He's got some great third up form out to 1,800 metres. I think around the $6.50 mark, I think he's the best value play on the day there tomorrow. So we'll go with him, Race 4, number 5, Mission Phoenix.
What about tomorrow at, well, it's Caulfield, isn't it? It's the Zipping Classic Day.
Yeah, it's shaping up to be a good program there at Caulfield. I've gone with Van de Clare in the Zipping Classic, guys. Obviously, wasn't in the finish of the Melbourne Cup, but form prior to that was outstanding, really tracking nicely this campaign and definitely back on track. Not much between him and Lutzi, who probably not as well suited under the weight scale this time, but was, again, very good last start, likes the dry ground, and, he's a horse that's... he's going to run really well there tomorrow as well. So I didn't think there was a great deal between those, but, shaping up to be a really, really good program down south as well.
Have you got a best at Caulfield outside the Zipping Classic?
Still got about four or five races to do this. So I'll be able to sort of find, nail down a best a bit later on today. But, okay. I thought Van de Clare drum well on the Zipping Classic. That's probably it at this stage.
Well, you're joining forces with Berkey and carrying the hopes of a nation with the Big Sports Breakfast Multi this morning, Davo, with your selection, Mission Phoenix, which is his best bet, by the way. So that's race 4, number 5 at Rose Hill tomorrow. It's in the multi to run top 2 along with Wales to beat the Wallabies 1-12, paying $9 the Sticky Wings multi. So you and Berkey can share the spoils hopefully on Monday. Davo, thank you.
Give us strength. I think there's always value in taking on the Aussie sides in a lot of sports. So... hopefully we don't get the job done in some way. But anyway, we'll see how it pans out. But fingers crossed we can get home and have a great weekend, everyone.
Thank you.